Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. The views expressed here are my opinions only, and they may not necessarily represent those of this station, its staff, management, or underwriters, Cambridge Investment Advisors, or otherwise. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor, local office, MKB Financial, 164 Maple Street in Auburn. Cambridge is not affiliated with MKB Financial Services. Welcome to the 216th edition of Money Matters on your community radio station. More market news today. My name's Mark Cunabrody, thanking you for tuning in today. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and matters money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, and some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money or lack of it or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's all about you. And I've always said, the bird flu or war, even a nuclear strike, cannot entirely wipe out a nation. Just look at Japan, all the other problems that all the other nations have had over history. But economic disasters can and have wiped complete civilizations from the map, or at least made them in a much different light or construction that they were prior to the economic destruction that befell them, whether internal or externally brought upon them. Remember, the barbarians didn't invade Rome until Rome had destroyed itself from within. They didn't have to come in at all. They just had to wait until Rome fell apart. So, into the Money Matters mailbag. You can send me an email at moneymatters@kvmr.org, wherever you're hearing the show, or address it to the program director at the station you are hearing the show on. I get a lot of emails. Please ask only general market questions. We don't give specific investment advice whatsoever. And I read a few on the air. And the first one: Mark, what is going on in the markets lately? We seem to keep going down and down. Well, that's what's going on in the markets. A friend of mine was a stockbroker. He used to say, Mark, there's more sellers than buyers. And when the market goes up, there's more buyers than sellers. So we have punched through 18,000 about 10 times now, if I recall. And now we're at 17,070. The next level of resistance, or let's say support below, next level of support, could be 17,000. So we'll see if that penetrates down through 17,000. No one can tell you which way the markets are going, of course. Oil sits at $41.29 a barrel, crude oil. And gold, $11.52.30 at the time of airing this show. Crude oil just can't seem to catch a bid, can it? All started when Saudi Arabia said they weren't going to cut back production, and the wheels kind of came off. So I like the lower gas prices, and we should rejoice in that. But there is a lot of debt based on oil drillers and frackers and all these other things. And what happens when you owe money and the product you're selling drops in value, you either have to shut your doors or sell more product. And so that's what's happening with the oil drillers. They're just selling more product to try to cover the expenses. Either that or they got to shut their doors, right? And so I've seen calls of oil going back up and oil's going back down. Nobody can tell you which way it'll go. But in the last couple of months, it has dropped some, has it not? I'm still paying about $3.29 a gallon in gas. So don't know what that's about. And the Dow down 278 as I speak. Dow down 278 points, 17,070 is where it happens. So the next support level, 17,000. We'll see. And got a brief pop a couple of days ago when Janet Yellen indicated that they may or may not raise interest rates. What else is new? I mean, they keep saying we might not. So who knows what they're going to do, right? And then, Mark, I have been looking at gold and accumulating gold at this price. What do you think? Well, no one can tell you if it's a good buy or not. I can tell you that when I started this show, it was around 350, 400, I believe, and went all the way to 1900 and some change. And almost cut in half again. It's 11:52:30. So hard to tell which way it's going to go. Everything is data dependent, as Janet Yellen says. It's very difficult to call market direction. That's for sure. I am of the belief that the Federal Reserve, if they do raise interest rates, I'm of the belief it'll only be a quarter of a point. I read a article from Daily Wealth saying that they might even only go on 1/8. I don't know what that'll do to the mortgages and everything else. So, don't know. I don't think they'll be able to do it, but that's my opinion only. Don't invest either way, depending on my opinion for sure. So, yeah. And Mark, I noticed you're off air in July and the website is down. Your website is down. I said, yes, my website is down. We're doing a revamp. And so hopefully we'll get it up soon. You can always check out the radio website, kvmr.org, of course. And you can find me through there. Or if you're listening in at another station, go to your community radio station's website. And it is a great place to see what's going to be aired, what's coming up in your program. And so I love supporting my community radio station by being here. And you can too. Just contact the program director or membership at your local radio station. What's good for your community is good for you, right? And so Thursday, August 20th, 2015 is the time of this live airing. You may be hearing it at a different date, of course, so market indices reflected at the time you may be hearing this show. If it's played on later, may not be accurate at time of airing. According to Wikipedia, U.S. corporate taxes are the highest in the world, according to Wikipedia. It is said that money flees to friendly shores, meaning companies set up shop where it best benefits them, and the tax they pay is definitely considered either a benefit or a hindrance. Corporations, of course, look to maximize profits. And the less taxes they pay, the more profits they keep. Although the U.S. sports many benefits for corporate locations, the highest tax rate in the world certainly doesn't help new businesses to start here nor existing businesses to stay. A handful of U.S. companies, including pharmaceutical giants Mylan and electronic firm Medtronic, has already fled U.S. shores using the strategy deemed tax inversion. Tax inversion. Now, what is tax inversion? Wikipedia defines tax inversion or corporate inversion as the relocation of a corporate's legal domicile to a lower taxation or corporate tax haven, all the while retaining its material operations in its higher tax country of origin. So if you have a U.S. company, it becomes a foreign company, but still has some stuff here, still might make things here or sells things here. The latest company to start discussing the possibility of its relocating is Sam Adams Brewer, called the Boston Beer Company. I find that ironic. The company with the most popular beer, named after a hero of the Revolution, considers leaving for the same reasons the Revolution started: onerous taxation by its central government. Although Boston Beer Company is not moving yet, its chairman, Jim Koch, told a Senate subcommittee last month, quote, "Because of our broken corporate tax structure, I can honestly predict that I will be the last American owner of Boston Beer." That was out from Bloomberg News. So they're not moving, but he is saying that I will likely be the last American owner of Boston Beer. How do you feel about that? With the familiar catcalls of paying their fair share and corporations are not people, many believe corporations don't pay enough in taxes, blaming higher prices of the goods on the companies themselves. Others argue high prices are to blame on Federal Reserve money printing programs like quantitative easing and low interest rates. Low interest rates, which by definition cause inflation by increasing the money supply. No matter what you believe or what the belief is, the fact remains companies are relocating offshore to avoid the highest corporate taxes on the planet. And with the talk of even higher taxes by the left side of the political aisle, the U.S. stands to lose even more companies and the jobs they offer as company CEOs look to greener pastures. I happen to have penned this article, and so obviously I agree. You know, it's a tough nut to crack. You know, should corporations pay more? Or if there's a feeling that if you make a corporation pay more taxes, they will pass the tax on in the form of higher prices. And that's basically what corporations usually do. Their job is to maximize profits for the shareholders. As if you have a massage parlor or you have a clothing store or a general contracting business, your job is to maximize profits for your stockholders, which in your case is you. And obviously that's what you try to do. You try to give a good product at a fair price, and people that buy your stuff must think it's a good product at a fair price or they wouldn't buy it. Dollars are what people vote with. So when you see a lot of people using cellular phones, it means that people are voting with their dollars that they want cellular phones. Or if you see a lot of people buying chainsaws, or they buy a particular company's wood hangers or whatever it be, they're voting with their dollars that particular company makes a better widget or a better something else. And it's the bastion of free market enterprise, capitalistic system, that allows that to happen. There's a lot of scuttlebutt about the capitalistic system run amok. And true capitalism, true market, free markets, you are allowed to buy what you want and not buy what you don't want. And nobody is subsidized by any outside force such as a government or anything else. And if you don't make good product, people don't buy your stuff. And until you make a good product, you go out of business. So that's basically the capitalistic system. Now, what we saw during the housing boom and bust and real estate bust and dot-com bust, at least in my opinion, is not free markets. People will blame the bust on, capitalism run amok. No, that was not the reason, in my opinion, for the real estate boom and bust and the dot-com blow-up. It was not capitalism run amok. Capitalism run amok would have corrected those excesses way before we would have seen busts and booms. So we have to, before we start pointing the finger at a particular methodology or the way we run the world, we have to make sure that we understand the way that methodology is really supposed to work. Capitalism basically says that you buy what you want with your dollars and you don't buy what you don't want. And the person that makes the best thing stays in business, and the person that makes the lousy thing goes out of business until he gets better at it. All this other stuff that you may have seen during these upsets are because of outside influences that try to come in and manipulate a free market. And then when you try to manipulate a free market, it's like trying to manipulate the Mississippi River. It's going to find its way down the hill one way or the other. And if you try to put little barriers here and there, you get a distorted river. Same thing with the economy. You try to put little barriers here and there, or help a particular group or subsidize another group, you get distortions all over the place. And we've got so much going on with the Federal Reserve and the IMF and European Central Bank and all these other things that influence this free market economy. It's very difficult for some to call what we see today a free market. I would deem to say that it is a distorted world economy that we're seeing. And some of the bubbles and pops and blow-ups and other problems we see is because the distortions are saying, hey, look, you know, you're trying to confine me, you're trying to stop the way I'm supposed to work, and when you do that, we get problems. So you're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, and we'll be right back.
What would your recommendations be?
And you're tuned to KVMR FM in Nevada City. Thanks for joining me today on Money Matters, 216th show of our economic forum. Thank you very much for tuning in. I hope we're going to help you out here today and give you an idea of what's going on in the world around us and see exactly what exactly is happening. And the stock market continues its volatility, and let's see if we can see where we're going today. Was down 280, it's down 296 now. And in CNBC, headline, Wall Street pummeled as traders fret over global economy and oil. So that's CNBC's take on it. What's your take on it, on the markets? You worried? You happy? I think it's going to be interesting to see what the Dow does with the 17,000 level. It's going to be interesting to see. These bigger numbers, 16,000, 10,000, 18,000, you know, these round numbers act like little areas of support or resistance. And so we'll see whether the Dow breaks down below 17,000 or not, or bounces off of it. And we'll take a look at it from there. Could be another bubble burning here in the world of economics again, of course, another bubble. What else is new? And according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, outstanding student loan debt in the United States lies somewhere between $900 billion and $1.2 trillion, with around $860 billion fostered by the federal government. So federal student loan debt. The feds loan the money. That debt is not the exact same debt we saw in the housing boom, but it is a lot of money. And, of course, the housing boom required the mother of all bailouts by the U.S. taxpayer. Various figures have been thrown around. I saw a figure last night from the Daily Reckoning of somewhere around $16 trillion has been guaranteed or used by the Federal Reserve. And when Bloomberg forced the Federal Reserve to reveal where they spent the money, we found out some eye-popping results. A lot of money went to the banking sectors and foreign banks and foreign companies and even private companies. So it was pretty stunning what the Federal Reserve had to tell us about where our money went. Although the debt of real estate back during the boom bust was held by both private investors and the federal government. From the figures I just read you, it's apparent most of today's student loan debt is covered by the federal government. A good portion of it is supplied by the government. Government debt, government money, is in the end paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. No surprise there. Typical student debt is north of $25,000 and sometimes well into five figures from the Fed New York data. And repaying that debt in a less than stellar job market can be a daunting task. However, relief may be at hand for many student debtors. A new trend is happening among those with student loans when the schools they attend decide to shutter their doors, such as the case with Corinthian Colleges. They are, among other colleges, found it hard to make proverbial ends meet, and Corinthian filed for bankruptcy in May, stranding thousands of students midstream in their education. Bloomberg Business called it in their July 22, 2015 article entitled "Taxpayers Could Lose Billions," the for-profit college implosion. And they said it is spreading and leaving many students billions in debt total, but without the degree they expected to receive from obtaining that debt. Under current U.S. law, students can't petition to have their loan forgiven due to college closings. Additionally, there's a facility called the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, the PSLF, federal program, which was initiated by the U.S. Department of Education, which allows for debt forgiveness under certain conditions. It allows for debt forgiveness if the student made 120 qualifying payments, if they undertake full-time qualified public service employment, and of course fall within the other guidelines of the program. Jobs that qualify for the full-time qualified public service employment clause are government organizations at any level, federal, state, local, or tribal, not-for-profit organizations that are tax-exempt under Section 501(c)(3) of the Internal Revenue Code, and some other types of not-for-profit organizations that provide certain types of qualifying public services. AmeriCorps and Peace Corps jobs also qualify for this clause. An interesting side note of this is, for those of you who are proponents of a smaller government, this program incentivizes more students to go into public service, because if you do that and you qualify under the other clauses, you can apply for debt forgiveness on the remaining balance. And of course, many of those that goes into these jobs are going to end up on the government payroll. In defense of the bailout, Education Secretary Arnie Dunn said in June that his agency would make it easier for a lot of students at Corinthian and other for-profit colleges to apply for loan forgiveness. He said, quote, "Many ended up with huge debts and degrees that meant little to taxpayers." He also said he vowed the department would also protect the taxpayer. Still, others side more directly with the taxpayer. Lindsay Burke, an education policy fellow at the Heritage Foundation, a think tank in Washington, said students should honor their obligations. She said, quote, "Any student can go to the education department and say they were misled, and the taxpayer picks up the tab." In conclusion, as for the massive line forming of students wishing to get out of paying what they owe, if they can get out of paying what they owe, the line waiting for those programs is likely to only get bigger. With many students now learning about these new programs that allow them to off their loans onto the backs of the taxpayer, the numbers are beginning to look massive and well into the tens of billions. Remember, total student loan debt is somewhere in the area of $1 trillion. with the majority of student loan debt coming from the U.S. taxpayer through federal loan programs, it's looking more and more likely that U.S. taxpayer will likely shoulder yet another massive bailout at their expense. We're also seeing similar things in the subprime auto loan market. With interest rates historically almost at their lows. We watch TV and we can see, buy a car with no money down. In the old days, of course, you used to see the price of the car on television. Now you don't see that. You just see zero down, zero payments, cash back, or whatever program they offer. There's always a sale going on. You ever notice that? There's Labor Day sale, and after Labor Day sale, it's Halloween sale, one in a lifetime, and after Halloween sale, it's inventory blowout sale, and after that, it's the January sale, and the Christmas sale, and holiday sale, and the May sale. People always think, oh, I got to get in on this sale, but you don't realize there's always another sale right by it. And it's always once in a lifetime sale, right? And we always see. So we're seeing massive amounts of subprime auto debt reported on many of the news medias, Daily Wealth, Money in Markets, even some of the major news outlets like Bloomberg have covered the blooming subprime auto mess. Could this parallel the subprime mortgage mess we saw? Figures are not as large, but they are growing larger. So you could argue that we may see more defaults. We may see more defaults on some of these debt baskets. And in a major move to unify the Euroblock and resulting from the harsh lessons learned from the recent Greek bailout fiasco, French President Francois Hollande proposed the creation of a new Eurozone government complete with its own budget and separate parliament in order to better address problems that may arise surrounding the common euro currency and its participants. So they're going to have instead of the European Central Bank, they're going to have their own parliament. He's proposing, well, maybe we should look at this. We should have the own parliament that basically controls the economic workings of all the countries that use the euro currency. At this time, 19 euro currency countries share the same currency, the euro. Yet governance surrounding the use of the euro remain mostly in the hands of each state, the overseeing body being, of course, the European Central Bank. Above them, the IMF. The contradiction or the argument is the shared use of a common currency, but its policies are left to separate entities, such as each country, and is obviously causing some of the issues which first surfaced in Greece, and if left that is, may cause more problems in subsequent member countries. Greece is trying to finalize their bailout here, and it's probably good thing for the euro, other euro countries, because if Greece had elected to leave the euro currency, we might have seen a domino effect with other countries leaving the euro currency as well. This radical new concept of a separate eurozone government is garnering at least initial support from the European Central Bank President Mario Draghi, and indeed from an economic standpoint. In my opinion, the proposal seems to make some sense. Draghi called for a shared treasury within the decade, should the proposal be adopted. And this creation of another centralized body will oversee more of each nation's fiscal and monetary policy. Now, that could meet resistance from countries wishing to remain autonomous and keep a certain degree of independence. After all, they're independent countries. So they may see a problem in an overseeing body that would tell them what to do outside of their own country. That's why they're independent countries. Indeed, pushback could come in the form of singling out Greece as the problem instead of a lack of a coordinating body over the whole block. An argument could be made why current compliant nations with euro rules without debt problems should succumb to more centralized control because one rogue debtor, which in the minds of most is causing the majority of problems. That one rogue debtor, of course, to be Greece. Establishing a new governing body over the Eurobloc would have other hurdles as well. How much voting power would each country have? And what would that power be based on? How much control would the new institution have over saying what could and couldn't be done in each respective economy? And what penalties would entail, and what violations would cause those penalties, and how would you enforce those penalties? Lord knows they're having a little bit of trouble enforcing anything with Greece. There are many more issues that would have to be resolved before any new euro government could be created, and although the idea may seem a sound one, actual implementation of such a proposal would require monumental negotiations and agreements in a bloc of nations that so far have exhibited less than stellar results any time they run into a problem. We'll have to see whether that proposal goes anywhere. For now, of course, we're stuck with what they have. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back. You're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Thank you for joining me today. And just out from Greece, from Athens, Prime Minister Alex Tsipras resigned today. And from Yahoo Finance, coming out from Reuters, resigned hoping to strengthen his hold on power and snap elections after 7 months in office, which he fought, obviously, for Greece's creditors for a better bailout deal, but had to cave in to get the bailout. Tsipras submitted his resignation to President Prokopis Pavlopoulos and asked for the earliest possible election date, a snap election. Government officials said the aim was to hold the election on September 20th. Tsipras is said to seek to quell a rebellion in his leftist Syriza party and seal public support for the bailout program, Greece's third since 2010. He said, "I will go to the President of the Republic shortly to submit my resignation as well as the resignation of my government." Faced with the near collapse of the Greek financial system, says Reuters, which threatened the country's future in the euro, which is what we've been talking about today, Tsipras was forced to accept the creditors' demands for yet more austerity, more spending cutback, and economic reform, the very policies he promised to scrap when he was elected in January. He said, "I want to be honest with you. We did not achieve the agreement we expected before the January elections." So, kind of a shocker. A snap election should allow Tsipras to capitalize on his popularity with Greek voters before the toughest part of the latest program begins to bite. So basically he says, "I'm going to resign. You have a snap election, and then you can put me back in if you want." And that way, if something goes bad, he could probably say, "Well, you put me back in. So you knew what I did, and you put me back in." So he's a politician. And we'll see what happens. You can read that story out from Reuters entitled "Tsipras Resigns, Paving Way for Snap Greek Elections." You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark Cunaberdi. Thank you for joining me today. Money Matters airs the first and third Thursdays, and occasionally more often and occasionally less often. And it's nice to be back on the airwaves again after about a month off, so thank you very much. And the big news last week was China surprised the world with a sudden and unexpected devaluation of their currency, the yuan. Chinese officials dropped the yuan 1.9% against the dollar. It had been pegged to the dollar, and they let it float in a very narrow range. So if the dollar got stronger, the yuan got stronger. If the dollar got weaker, the yuan got weaker. Of course, the United States officials were always on the Chinese to let their currency float, which, as it got stronger, it would just parallel the U.S. dollar and make their imports more expensive to us. They want it to float, and if it floated, they anticipated it would fall in value, so they did devalue 1.9%. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but in the world of currencies, that is a lot. 1.9%. The next day, they repegged it and let it drop again. I think it was 1.6% the next day, when that was a surprise to many. They thought it would only be a one-time deval. Nobody really expected it. And when they did it, they thought that they would stop there, but they didn't. Next day, they came out and let it slip again. A currency devaluation is rare and usually accomplished without the official devaluation announcement that China just made. Governments resort to the printing presses most of the time to devalue their dollars. They just print up tons of cash that drops the value of all the cash in the system. That accomplishes the devaluation slowly over time without a radical overnight move. Currency devaluation weakens the buying power of that currency, which makes things more expensive for that nation's citizens, but makes goods and services of that nation cheaper to foreigners. In other words, their price tags of their exported goods drop. That helps their domestic companies sell more overseas. Deliberate and a sudden planned devaluation is a radical move. And their stock market had been in free fall. And their country's decade-long growth was slowing. Chinese government obviously felt a quick and decisive overt devaluation would kickstart things in a positive direction. The market in China has not reacted well since then. And world markets don't usually like surprises, usually centering around a large country's currency, as these things tend to upset the apple carts of all nations until these currency moves are digested. And the market sold off worldwide initially with the surprise announcement and the follow-up announcement the next day. Much of the Chinese stock market is still restricted by the government due to the recent fall, and it remains to be seen just how badly the Chinese market will affect the rest of the world. But one could make an argument that the downward trend in stocks worldwide appears to be ongoing, at least today. Whether it'll be ongoing tomorrow, no one can say for sure. Dow is down 293 at 17054. NASDAQ down 1.69%. No, NASDAQ down 2.36%. The Dow down 1.69%. So I think 17,000 is going to be a level to watch. Others do see a buying opportunity here as markets sell off. But trying to guess the bottom can sometimes be hazardous to one's financial health. I always say, don't try to catch a piano on the way down, right? Wait till it hits the floor. But who knows when that is? That's the trick. With the Chinese currency close to 4% cheaper than it was a couple of weeks ago, it's possible other countries will take the same path, devaluing their currencies in order to boost their exports. And it's this tit-for-tat currency devaluation retaliation, which is commonly referred to as currency wars, something I have covered many times on this show, currency wars. I have a show entitled Currency Wars, and you could listen to that show if you like. It was done quite a while ago. The financial waters do indeed seem turbulent lately, and the move by the Chinese does little to calm the increasing tempest. And if anything, probably adds to the uncertainty. But we will see which way the markets go. Today is Thursday, and we'll see what happens tomorrow. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, and we'll be right back to take a couple phone calls if I have time, 530-265-9555, or sum up the market moves. My name's Mark Cuniberti. And you're tuned to Money Matters right here on your community radio station. And it's interesting, Donald Trump called into the Morning Joe on MSNBC today, where Mike Brzezinski asked him about his thoughts on minimum wage. Trump said, "I want to create jobs so you don't have to worry about the minimum wage, but I think having a low minimum wage is not a bad thing for this country." It's kind of nebulous in the middle there, isn't it? Meanwhile, on Yahoo Finance, McDonald's pay debate goes international. McDonald's minimum wage protests have spread abroad this week. Legislators, union leaders, and McDonald's workers from across the world have gathered in Brazil to discuss labor practices at the fast food chain. That also out on Yahoo Finance. Just came out a couple of hours ago. And, of course, Jared Vogel, I guess, from Subway, has got himself in some hot water with some inappropriate internet browsing and some other rather lurid details. So Subway has let him go. I'm sure you could find that on the web at some point if you're interested in that. Spokesman for Subway for many, many years. He is now gone. And so there you go. So we're wrapping up the show today. This is show number 216 of your economic forum, Money Matters, on your community radio station. And picked up by a variety of show by a variety of stations throughout the United States. And so the markets are definitely volatile. I guess we can safely say that. And we'll have to stay tuned. You can send me an email wherever you are hearing the show and comment on the show or the station at moneymatters@kvmr.org, or we welcome your input. Send an email to the program director at your community radio station and say we want to make a comment on Money Matters, or you can send it to me direct. Don't ask me specific questions, of course. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. And the views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily represent those or reflect those of KVMR staff, members, or underwriters, or of Cambridge Investment Advisors Incorporated. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor, local office, MKB Financial, 164 Maple Street in Auburn. Cambridge is not affiliated with MKB Financial Services. And do send me an email. I'd love to hear from everybody regarding the show. And stay tuned for your community radio station for more upcoming talk and music for your listening pleasure. My name's Mark. God bless. I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.